Well, good evening, Mayor and Council. This is a special council briefing. Council had expressed a concern of wanting to talk with our attorneys about legal situations with the Volunteer Life Saving Corps, so we've invited our outside counsel, Cliff Shepherd, and Sandy Robinson to have that dialogue with you tonight. With that, I'm going to turn it over to Sandy, if she wants to say a few words, and then we'll turn it over to Cliff.
Good evening, everyone. I'm presenting from down here because it's easier for me to respond to your questions looking at you than looking sideways at you. But the purpose for this meeting tonight was to have an opportunity for staff to present publicly options to the City Council for a pass forward with the BLSC, and also to give you all a public opportunity to discuss these options and maybe how we got to the place we are right now. So in order to frame this for those who are looking at our briefing tonight and who are not familiar with this dispute, I want to explain how we came to this particular place. So back in January of this year, the city discontinued its long practice of sharing its lifeguard duties on our beaches. That decision was made due to a complaint that was made to the Department of Labor. Now, prior to January, the city had been performing lifeguard duties 6 days a week, Monday through Saturdays, and sharing those duties with the BLSC on Sundays and some holidays. As a result of this complaint, however, the city discontinued that practice, in large part because we were told that our actions and our relationship with the BLSC had risen to a level that where it was found to be in violation of federal minimum wage and overtime laws. As a result of that finding, we were forced, if you will, where we had to pay over $234,000 out for back wages and overtime. And as a result of those findings, we made that decision to change our operations. Now, once we changed our operations, we contacted the BLSC. We called meetings with them to discuss not only our plans, explain why those plans were being implemented, but we also tried to engage them in discussions as to how we could move forward, continuing their presence in our community. Those meetings did not go particularly well. And at the end of those efforts, the BLSC has sued us. They've sued us twice now. And they have also engaged in efforts to change our charter. One of the lawsuits was lost. One lawsuit is pending, but has been recently expanded to include 7 additional claims. And we understand now that a second petition to change our charter is underway. So the timing of all of this in our meeting gives us an ideal opportunity to flesh out if there really is a legal path forward with the BLSC. Tonight, Mr. Cliff Shepherd is here. He's our outside counsel. He's attorney of record in our litigation with the BLSC. He will assist me in the presentation. We will both answer your questions as they come up. You can either ask them in real time as you think of them, or wait until the end. But the end goal is to provide you with an opportunity to get the information you need and to make sure that the members of the community also have access to this particular discussion. If at the end of this presentation, it's clear that the discussion is leading to a place where an offer of settlement is the reasonable thing to do, I will ask you at the end of this to schedule a shooting meeting. And with that, I'll turn this over to you.
Well, from the legal perspective, it is always uncomfortable to talk to a client publicly about pending litigation. It's kind of like the thing you don't want to ever do. But I also understand the reasons why here it's pretty important because of public transparency and, frankly, really poor messaging regarding what's actually going on here and who's doing what to whom and at what cost. And so while I was asked to brief on the VLSC case generally, I want to focus on an aspect that's very important for all of you to understand and for the public to understand, and perhaps even individual members of VLSC to understand, because I have a doubt about whether they might. And that is who has really been trying to resolve the dispute with VLSC. in good faith. So back in January and February, you may recall I was here for what was supposed to be my last meeting for charter review. Didn't quite work out that way, and I'm not unhappy about that, but because I was there, I caught what I think might have been the second opportunity where you all were engaged by a very large crowd of people, mostly from VLSC, former members, current members, all supporters, who were unified in one voice to say the following: please figure out a solution so we can continue to work together. That was the charge. I remember it well because we heard it repeated, what, 50, 60, 70 times that night. And while there have been several developments in and actions taken by the VLSC since that day, including the lawsuits that were mentioned by Sandy, most of them have not been helpful in the cause of resolution. There was a very detailed and positive attempt, though, made by the city to resolve the case. And so because I think there's been a ton, literally a ton of misinformation coming from various quarters within the city, and where there's less information, there's also a lack of information that's accurate on this topic, I thought it would be best to present a clearer picture here so you were aware of what your staff attempted to do back in March of 2022 to find a path forward with the VLSC in an effort to get us to a resolution, and then how that effort was received by VLSC. In that regard, I prepared a little PowerPoint. I have provided you, in front of you, in case you now wonder what these things are, documents. The first one is the agreement that was prepared by staff. I had no involvement in it. That says agreement between the City of Jacksonville Beach and the Volunteer Life Saving Corps for Ocean Rescue Services. And the second document is the red line version, the one we got back from VLSC. You'll see a lot of red. But that's what we're going to talk about. Okay, so let's talk about what it was. So this is the settlement history. The last major discussions regarding settlement. In its investigation, the Department of Labor determined that because the city and the VLSC were sharing facilities, equipment, and training, the city was responsible to pay wages to VLSC volunteers, including those who would never work for the city. In March 21, 2022, the city sent VLSC a comprehensive offer regarding continued use of the station to establish separation between the two entities. Now, this is important to realize here because there's a dialogue that says we have been trying to keep them out of the station and we never attempted to put them back in, and that's just not true, as you'll see. The offer included that VLSC could continue using the station for rescue and lifeguard services on Sundays and holidays, with both organizations leaving the station on their off days. If that sounds familiar, it's because it's exactly what VLSC asked for. The city would share some, but not all, of its equipment with VLSC. On March 31st, 2022, VLSC rejected the offer. No one knows exactly what they rejected. So the city's offer: the parties will each have exclusive use of the station during their designated service times. Again, sounds familiar because it's exactly what the VLSC asked for. Here's its response: they rejected it. And only VLSC may access the dormitories, the second floor, and the locker room. And if you want to find that in the section of the document where the red lines are, look for 3.1, and you'll see it's all lined up. That's where the proposal was made, and that's where they rejected it. The city reserves the right to exercise sole control of the station. And this one really is baffling. When the city's emergency operations plan is in effect, such as during a hurricane, that would seem like a no-brainer to the average bear, particularly a beach resident. Rejected. 3.3. The city's offer: the city will share some of its equipment, with the majority of equipment kept separate. Now, there's a reason for this, because if you know what was in the investigative report, they found that the same training, the same equipment, and all the same facilities, all those things were one of the reasons why they found we were co-employers. So we proposed the solution. Their response is: the city shall agree to provide any equipment desired by VLSC for a nominal sum, 4.1. VLSC will reimburse the city for any claim for workers' compensation made by a VLSC volunteer. Why is that obviously important? Because if they're volunteering and supposed to be at no cost to the city, we do not want to be embroiled in their issues. So that's a reasonable proposal. They rejected it. 7.3. VLFC will provide insurance for any VLFC-owned vehicles. Rejected. 7.3. City's offer. VLFC will provide written copies of bylaws or policies establishing that city employees are not allowed to volunteer for VLFC. Then, again, that sounds familiar because that's what they said they would do. Because that's, in their mind, the only issue. Rejected. 8.1D. The property's ownership, meaning the station, is unaffected. It doesn't belong to them, doesn't belong to us, it stays with the ARC, and we figure out a way to make it work. Instead, the city agrees to give the property to VLSC for free. 10.5. Now, that's the end of the presentation, but it's not the end of all the points that were made and rejected. Those are just the highlights or lowlights, depending on your review. But here's the point, and the large messaging opportunity dismissed. Anybody who is a reasonable person living in the city of Jackson Beach, knowing that those things were proposed, I would think would have a different view of who the problem is and where it lies. Unless city taxpayers like stroking checks to the Department of Labor continuously because of these problems that we didn't bring upon ourselves. They were foisted upon us, and we just simply have to do what we have to do to protect the public first. That's it. Now, just because they rejected the offer back in March, we've both learned some things since then. When I say both, I mean VLSC and us. One of the things we've learned is that perhaps, in some ways, the rejection of that proposal was a positive, because one of the things that, as I mentioned, that they were focused on is this was a simple problem to solve. All they had to do, which, as you saw, they rejected, is agree never to hire or have as volunteers anybody who ever worked at the city of Jackson Beach. But what we found is it's not that simple. This is a handout put out by the Wage and Hour Division, fact sheet 14A. I'd love to take credit for it, but it belongs to Max Topopoulos, who found it. And why is this important? Well, it's not the law. But when a government agency puts out a handout like this, it's because this is something there's no doubt about. They're really sure of their position on this particular point. And you'll see as I read it to you that there are two things they talk about with volunteers that make the difference between somebody who has to be paid and somebody who doesn't. It's under a section called volunteers, and it says, the FLSA recognizes and generally the generosity and public benefits of volunteering and allows individuals to freely volunteer in many circumstances for charitable and public purposes. That's the first thing, so I don't want to leave that out. At the end of this paragraph, it says, typically, such volunteers serve on a part-time basis and do not displace regular employed workers or perform work that would otherwise be performed by regular employees. Meaning that since we provide this service 6 days a week previously and now 7 days a week in holidays, any placement of a volunteer in place of a paid worker is a violation of the policy. That's a problem, and it's not something we fully appreciated in March of 2022, but we appreciate it now. The next sentence says, in addition, paid employees of a nonprofit organization cannot volunteer to provide the same type of services to their nonprofit organization that they are employed to provide. This, of course, goes to the us having an employee who's also a volunteer. So it's both things have to not be true. It's not as simple as, oh, well, if we don't ever have any employees of the City of Jackson's volunteers, we're golden. It is also, if they are providing on the days we're not there, the exact same service that a paid party would provide, that we may well be forced to pay them, which means they're no longer volunteers, and they're no longer free, and it's another expense to the city, which, by the way, as you know, we've already been absorbing since March. And again, just to make this point, because it seems to be lost on everyone I talk to, it's not on city council. 6 days a week for 100+ years, we did this. They did it one day a week and on holidays. And if that disparity isn't understood by the general public, I don't know what to say. Because it's really that simple. This is what we do. I don't think that just because we failed in this first effort that we should stop. But it does take two to tango. We've got to have a dance partner. And so I think we should try again and have some ideas about how that might work. We've learned more, as you learned from that flyer, about the legal problem we may encounter in trying to resolve this in a go-forward way. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't try. And I'm hoping that as our eyes have been opened, that maybe that BLSC and its legal team's eyes have been opened, and perhaps in a way that they can understand that you wouldn't want to be in a situation where the people who provide the services 6 days a week are controlled by the people who volunteer 1 day a week. Because that's the non-starter for the city, or at least it should be. If we structure it the right way, I think Ms. Robinson said she will ask you for a shade meter. That's a recognized exception to the Sunshine Law. It allows us, under very specific conditions, to get together privately. Here are the conditions. It's just the council members and the city manager and the attorneys and the court reporter. That's it. Everything we say at that meeting will be taken down on the court reporter's machine and transcribed, but held under seal by the city until the completion of all litigation related to the matter. And then it's a public record. So even in that setting, we need to be polite, careful what we say. It's not a free-for-all. It's basically just have an opportunity to talk, but only then, about specific things. And one of those specific things is the settlement, which is what I'm proposing that this one be about. Because I have some thoughts, and I'd like to get your input on some of those thoughts about what we might do to structure a settlement proposal. The meeting could be held, depending on your agreement to it, because the way that it works is it's very specific in that we have to ask, the legal team has to ask, but you have to agree, and then it has to be scheduled, and notices go out. You start in a public setting like this, open the meeting, and then adjourn to the private setting, and then reopen the meeting, and then close the meeting. So it opens and closes in public, everything in the middle is in private, and at the point at which litigation is resolved, then you get the everything that we said in the private meeting becomes public record. If the schedules cooperate, like I said, we could do this as early as next week. The second thing you should know is that on Monday of this week, we filed a new action on your behalf, and it was to quiet the title of the station. This is an issue I know none of you really were looking forward to having to do because of the accusation that somehow this whole thing was a ruse as a land grab. But in fact, as you all now well understand, if we don't control the station, we have nowhere to provide the services. And so this is not an unimportant issue to the city, but it doesn't have to be resolved by change in ownership. But it does have to be resolved with a change in attitude. It ain't our attitude that's the problem in this one. And so I would suggest to you that since we now have pending litigation on that matter as well, that we could discuss possible settlement of that issue at the same time in the same meeting. But it is, again, untenable to be in a situation where the six-day-a-week provider of services has to cater to the one-day-a-week provider of services who are volunteers. This doesn't make any sense. You wouldn't do that with police explorers. We have police explorers, right? They ride the cars. But they don't tell you when you can ride in the cars because they're explorers. So here's the last but not the least kind of thing I want to talk about today. We filed also today, this afternoon, a detailed motion to dismiss of the new additional six or seven counts that were added to the lawsuit that's been pending back since March or April against us. We believe that's going to succeed, I'd say with a high degree of probability, but it doesn't mean the case is over. Everybody misunderstands. There's numerous opportunities in the lawsuit for people to amend the complaint and bring other claims. I think that's probably what will happen here. But here is my hope. That in the meantime, if we have this shade meeting and we can come up with a proposal, and I've already prepared, I've spoken to Mr. Roberts, the new lawyer for the LSC on this, told him that I would expect that I would be in a position to bring something forward to him, that maybe we could get them to agree, for reasons that I'll explain, to dismiss the lawsuit without prejudice, ability to bring it back at any time they need to. We wouldn't fight about statute of limitations or any of those issues. We could stipulate to all of that. But here's the reason. Because even though we think, we understand based on this flyer and consultations we've had with actual labor lawyers, which I'm not one, about what is required of us to do this thing right, we could get an opinion from the Department of Labor that would give us the guidance we need to be right. Because this is not about being right in the sense that I want to win and you need to lose. It's about being legally right because, as I've said many, many times, government is not in the business of trying to violate the law. Our litigation opponents have said, you didn't conclude this thing all the way. You didn't fight it all the way with the Department of Labor. You just gave in. We're not supposed to fight when we're violating the law. We're supposed to get it right. And so, what the Department of Labor offers, and we think we can get, but only if there's no litigation pending, that's one of their requirements, is an opinion from them about a proposed settlement. So the idea would be, we come with a proposal, these are the terms. If they say we think this would be something we could live with, or tweak it and get it something we could live with, then we can go to the Department of Labor. If there's no pending litigation, then get an opinion that'll kind of sign us off. So that's kind of the big picture. That's down the road a little bit, but not really long. Maybe a week, depending on how long we need and how long it takes to put together a proposal. But that would be the issue. And hopefully, if they are serious about wanting to resolve it, they would understand that it doesn't place them in any worse position. It delays a little bit, but because the complaint is going to be dismissed, and again, I feel very certain about that. And because they got a referendum, that's not till March at earliest, that we should have time to resolve some of these things on a collaborative basis as opposed to a grinding gears basis, and that's kind of the goal. So I'm prepared to take your questions. I'll be careful about what I won't and will answer because it's still litigation, but that's my briefing.
Just a detailed question. When you say the pending litigation, they won't give us an opinion until there is no pending litigation. Does that include?
You can go right to the website because that's one of the first things we did is we looked to see if I could. I actually wrote an email to them and said, hey, notwithstanding that you have this, would you give us an opinion so we could figure out how to structure a settlement? And the answer was no, because they're very firm on that no pending litigation thing. And the opinion, is it a guarantee of anything? It's not a guarantee, but it's a huge step in the right direction if we can say, hey, this is the thing we agreed to, and you said it would be okay as long as we adhered to it. And you know, it's sort of like when we settled with them, we don't have anything other than, I think it was a letter we got finally saying, okay, we understand you're going to make these payments, and we made them, and we will go forward and sin no more. Essentially, that's what it says. That's what we're trying not to do. We're trying not to sin again. We're all fall short of the grace, I guess, but at any rate, you get the point. We're trying to not screw up again.
The question, though, that I had was regarding the pending litigation. Even if we resolve or get to some sort of settlement with the VLSC litigation, what about the Mr. Thompson suit against us?
That's a different thing altogether, but I would think, and the distinction we'll make is our litigation that's involving the questions that we're asking have really nothing to do with Mr. Thompson. As I understand it, and again, I'm not involved in that case, but the Department of Labor part of that case is already resolved. The ongoing part of that case is the alleged discrimination, which I don't even know what it's about. I don't know whether it's age-based, I don't know even what it's based on. But our questions are, okay, totally unrelated to Mr. Thompson, what about an ongoing relationship with VLSC? Can we do some of the things that we've suggested and it be okay so we're not going to be writing big checks as long as we continue to do business with VLSC? Because at the end of the day, I know because I've having spoken to all of you at various times, the goal, notwithstanding what's been accused, has never been to dump VLSC. It's to not throw away taxpayer money. That's been the goal. And so you can spend it however you want to spend it, but that's the reality. And so what I'm trying to do on your behalf is find a way that we can safely say we have the best advice that we can get from the OL that says if you do it this way, you'll stay out of trouble. That's simple.
Councilor Dumont.
Thank you. When this started way back when, and the first part of Mr. Thompson's case was settled and we paid out, I asked about the DOL and getting guidance on the original one that was drafted, and I was told that no, we couldn't, DOL would not give us the opinion because the two cases were tied together. They were in the same case. So it was the back wages and then the unlawful The unlawful firing. That's a piece. And the unlawful firing, they were the same lawsuit, and because of that, we couldn't get the opinion from the DOL, because only half the case had been resolved.
I think there has to be a little bit of clarity on this, Councilor Dumont. Although Ross Thompson's claims overlap with the DOL's investigation, and were really his complaint actually led to the investigation, they've treated these as separate causes throughout the entire process. So even though the back wage claim has kind of been resolved by the findings made on his complaint, his lawsuit for back wages still exists. That count has not been resolved because he did not participate in the settlement that we made relative to the payout that was made in December and January of this year. Also, he has a separate count that deals with an allegation of retaliation. So whatever we do with the VLSC and that pending litigation, we can still seek an opinion on these issues without it spilling over to his. We believe that to be the case.
I'm just confused because I asked specifically about this repeatedly back in January, February, March, where the answer was no, we can't get the opinion from DOL because the other part of the case is still open.
Well,
are we sure that we will get an opinion from the DOL if we can say that if the VLSC drops without prejudice their lawsuit, but the Mr. Thompson one is still partially open? Are we sure we can actually move forward with the DOL?
I think we're pretty confident we can for this reason. First of all, if your questions were asked as recently as March, this lawsuit with the VLSC did not arise until April. So the only pending litigation at the time of your questions, Ross Thompson's litigation was it. Our issues with whether we were in violation of the wage and overtime laws were completely framed by his litigation. When we go back with the VLSC, our questions and our request for an opinion will be designed around the facts that are particular to us trying to work out an agreement with our unpaid or volunteer lifeguards. And it should not spill over to Mr. Thompson. And that's the grounds on which we're presuming this will work. We feel confident that it will work because, again, our questions will be narrowly tailored to this particular relationship, the city and VLSC, not the individual members that form the VLSC. And I think it'll work. But in terms of context, I think that might be why you got the answer you have, but I do think that there's always been a distinction between the investigation issues and also all of the issues that he's raised in his lawsuit.
So just for clarity's sake, you're saying that what we are doing right now with the DOL is regarding the second issue with the VLSC, and the first one with Mr. Thompson and the VLSC will not be taken into consideration by the DOL with regard to forming an opinion on the second one, even though they are linked?
Well, the issue, there's an overlap. So we share issues, and it can happen in a number of levels. But our question to the DOL is going to be narrowly tailored to just our working relationship with the VLSC. We're going to rely heavily on the findings that the DOL made relative to the city's relationship with the VLSC and any possibility of continuing our paid services through their volunteerism on those additional days of the week that are now being provided by the city.
Okay.
So I can say is we're confident that if we narrowly construe the questions to this dispute that's covered by our pending litigation with VLSC, we will be okay.
Okay, final question. Have you reached out to the DOL to find out if your interpretation and going narrow will produce an opinion from them?
Well, I think Mr. Shepherd indicated his reach to say, listen, we know you have this general rule about litigation. Here's what we are proposing with respect to this party. Again, even though reaching out was narrowly tailored to just the VLSD, not to Mr. Thompson specifically, and their answer was no. But if you're asking specifically, did we say, hey, we have two cases that touch on the same issues. We want to get rid of one so we can get an opinion relative to our relationship to that one party. I'm pretty confident that that question was not asked. I have not asked it. And this is, again, this is a proposal. So, I mean, this is sort of the best opportunity to move forward lawfully without there being any unnecessary negative consequences. Okay. So we either take that or we don't. Thank you.
What I can say about that is this, and I'm going from memory here, I wish I could pick it up, but I think that the question that I framed, and this was before the VLSD litigation, was to the effect of, as I've said, what we've heard a lot of is all the VLSD has to do is agree not to have any city employees volunteer. And I think the question that I put to the investigator, was, is that true? Will you tell us whether that's true? And they said, no, we're pending litigation. And at that time, the only pending litigation was the Thompson litigation. But we have a different set of facts now. But let me, you know, play the pessimist. Let's suppose that the Department of Labor says, yeah, we're still considering the Thompson thing to be something that keeps us from weighing in. And that's possible at the booth. What would we then do? Well, what I would recommend to you is, as I mentioned, I'm not a labor lawyer, but we have consulted some of the best, and so Mr. Stephopoulos knows one of them, and I've got another one that we've been talking to. All of these people are very knowledgeable, and they're the ones who alerted me to some of the issues that were running up. Essentially, what I'd want to know now, given what I think might work, but I'm not sure, is, am I correct in this flyer, in terms of how it reads, that we just can't let the VLSC go out on the beach without us being there, doing the exact same thing we would be doing for money if we were there. And if they say, no, you can do that, that's fine, then okay, that's something we do. But again, that's not what that appears to say. And so a solution along the lines of having them provide additional coverage, you know, maybe whether we have where we have chairs now, maybe they would be in between those chairs or something like that, so that we're not, they're not duplicating what we're doing. They're providing a supplement or an additional service. I think that's the path we may have to navigate to get past what I'm being told there. Because again, we know for a fact we're providing it 7 days a week and holidays. We know that. And so we know that if they provide it and we're not, and they're replacing a paid worker, which that says you cannot do. So we're trying to figure out, okay, how do we navigate that? And I would like to think they would give us the information, but in the absence of that, we would go to the professionals we've chosen and say, look, what are your thoughts? In some ways, dealing with the federal government is much like dealing with the IRS part. You know, they have this hotline. You can call for advice, and if you can actually ever get through, you get a live body on the phone, and they'll tell you whatever you want to know, but then they will probably say, but we don't stand behind any of it. So you almost may be better off with someone who is a professional lawyer doing this job daily, and how they would advise clients from a labor perspective, and that may be as good as we can get. But we'd like, the gold seal would be to get something from the Department of Labor also.
Mr. Jansen. So, first off, in my experience, I don't know that the federal government's in the business of offering opinions on findings of municipalities. I think what they do is they say, here's the rules, have at it. And that's what I've experienced in my lifetime. And not that I've had a whole lot of experience in the legal arena other than in law.
They didn't have a position on this website that said they would give an opinion, I would agree with you. But they say that they will, so we're hopeful that they actually mean what they say on the website.
Right, right. And you brought up a lot of good points up there. One of them that went past you was 6.4 in reference to the hazing. We had a nice detailed paragraph there about how that looks. And I'll just bring attention to a news article that was published back in, I think, 2020, where an individual was clamoring about how well their experience was with the VLSC. And in an innocuous sentence in the middle of this media press release, they talked about
the hazing portion of their training. And when it comes to something like that, I think we do need to be detailed about that and moving forward, because I don't want any of that liability falling on the city. We're in a different age and day and time than in the past. So that needs to be clearly defined, I think. However, I am in support of moving towards a shade meeting, and let's see if we can, you know, if the VLSE is willing to have conversation and revisit a contract or an agreement, then I'm willing to have a shade meeting with my colleagues here and see where we can go with it.
And to be clear, just so everybody understands, that would be about proposing solutions and answering questions. But whatever we decide, or we don't actually sound too clear, because that's the wrong word. Whatever information we gather from that meeting, we go back in the public, and in public you will say, we authorize you, if you do, to make a settlement along the proposal along the following lines, and you know, we'll do it out. But that part will be in public. The private part will be for the discussions of the pros and cons, for us to answer your questions and tell you why we think this might be a good solution or whatever. But at the end of the day, the action taken as a result of the private part will be in public.
Yeah, I was just going to respond to that, just to say that I think that another point I wanted to make was that our obligation is, you know, one of our obligations as council members is to protect our city and against these, you know, any liabilities that might arise over decisions that are made. So when that liability sits on the table, I think it has to be resolved before we move forward.
Mayor?
I just want to thank you for this opportunity and for going through some of the points of, I mean, if we could kind of go back in time to March, back when it was as simple as 16-page contract or whatever it is, because I don't think the public and the community knows that there was a proposal and then there was a bloodletting. So I think we're even, as you said, kind of beyond this. So I do support a shade meeting. I do think we need to see really what the realities are in terms of what the future looks like. And I've said that about this all along. We know what the past is. We know what the history of these two organizations has been. What's up to us now is the future of this relationship. So if we do nothing, correct me if I'm wrong, there's potentially a vote on the ballot in March.
Yes.
And if that prevails, there's still going to have to be working out of details and implementation and everything like that.
That is accurate, and there is, I don't know what exactly to believe, because the referendum that was proposed most recently just deals with the relationship between the city and VLSC on a go-forward basis, and most importantly, not the more controversial issue of the building. But in a flyer that was sent out that y'all were all copied on, it says that there are going to be two referendum questions. I haven't seen the second one. I would assume that flyer meant what it said and that it's coming. I would like it not to, because that would take a lot of the heat away from the situation when you really gotta fight to keep the building or we have no place to provide the service. And you cannot be controlled, as I said, by a one-day-a-week organization when you're providing the services 6 days a week. You just can't.
So that would be the amendment or the citizen initiative. Then the case has already been set for trial for April. But now that's been, so at the soonest it would be April, but it's probably going to be later than that due to the additional filings.
It'll definitely be later, because how this works now, the legal language is at issue. That happens when there's a complaint and an answer, and time has passed, and a notice of trial was done, all of which was done, and that's why April was the agreed upon date. But then the prior law firm was dismissed, I guess, or whatever, and then a new law firm was brought in. They made an appearance in the case, they substituted in for the old law firm, and they filed this amended complaint. But when you do that, that ticks everything back, because we haven't answered. Instead, we filed a motion to dismiss. That will get a hearing. It'll be granted or denied. I think it'll be granted, but we'll see. And then they'll have to file another pleading, and we'll go through this whole series of pleading dances until we get something finalized. Again, we'll be filing an answer, and then we'll move for trial. And even when we were set for April, we were told we were like 80th in the docket, so the chances we would have gone in April didn't seem particularly high, but nevertheless, that's the date we got. So in terms of timing for the new one, I wouldn't even venture a guess, but I would definitely say it would be unlikely to be before next fall. Could it be? Could be, but I wouldn't expect it.
Thank you.
Councilor DeMott?
Thank you. I'm glad you brought up the buildings. I see this as two separate issues. One is them providing services, which is something that they've been very vocal about, that they want to get back on the beach and save lives and provide services. And then the other one is the building. And how does the building, given that we just did a quiet claim, how does that fit in with any kind of a possible settlement with the VLSC, knowing that the building means is really an integral part of how they view them themselves providing services?
Well, again, you can't forget the ARC and all of its process, and that's where we have filed the quiet title action. But at the end of the day, some of this I really won't talk about in the shade meeting, but I'll just say this. For a long, long time, we were able to provide the services, both of us, for our respective dates, and neither of us owned the building. But only one of us had a reverse clause, and it wasn't VLSC. So what I'm trying to tell you is, there's a possibility of coming back to that place where, as I suggested in the settlement proposal, that we had said, the ownership didn't have to change, and yet we still were able to go forward, but in a way that doesn't get the city back in a spot for the DOL. I think that opportunity still exists. The question is, do we have to slam the door on ownership in order to not ever have the threat again held over our heads of losing the only place we can provide these services? Because if we do, the decision that I fear the city confronting is the one that's like the elephant in the room. Can we even continue to provide services if we don't have access to a building that we control? You wouldn't do that with any other city service. You wouldn't do that with your police building, you wouldn't do it with your fire building, you wouldn't do it with your public works building. And you shouldn't do it with your lifeguard station. It makes no sense.
So the motion that you filed today or yesterday, the
lawsuit.
Yes. How does that, can you unfile it? Or would
yeah,
you?
That's what
okay.
We'll talk about
in a shady
meeting.
Okay.
But I have a solution for that one. And I would think, but I don't know, that it would be acceptable to the American Red Cross. That's what we'll talk about.
Yeah, thank you.
Based on that flyer and the other information you brought up, would you say that the original settlement agreement is still something viable, or is our original settlement agreement even violate what we've learned since then?
That's really what I want. I think most of it could be. It was to my way of thinking, and I'm not only biased, and I would be anyway, because this doesn't make sense to me in a way that it's not just I'm being a mouthpiece of it. I really don't get the other position. But having said that, except for this part about replacing an employee who was paid to do the same work, that's the thing that we didn't know then that we know now. There's a possibility that everything else that we proposed could still work if VLSC would reconsider their position, where they would have access to the buildings when they want them for their days. They would be using their equipment, we would be using ours, they'd have a place to store their equipment and be secured. You know, and some of the other things like the no hazing thing. To be fair, the reason I didn't put that in the PowerPoint is because while they did delete all of that language, they added language in with reference to some act that we would comply with, and there's the name of a human being, I don't remember the name, act, which apparently must do with hazing. I don't know whether it has to do with something happening to maternity or something, because that's what we see a lot.
It's the Meredith Act.
Yeah, something like that. And so I don't know what that act is, candidly, but it was a proposal to attempt to address that issue. From the city's perspective, and frankly from theirs as well, it seems like the last thing that either body would want to be associated with is hazing, and particularly in this day and age. But yet, as Mr. Jensen pointed out, as recently as 2020, one of their recent graduates was bragging about having been hazed in a class of, I think she said 30 or something, and they only six survived to finish and graduate. This isn't Navy SEALs here.
I had two more questions. The original referendum from the VLSC was dismissed because of errors that were created, and the judge
you know, set a really, really high bar of not what it would take to not put it on the ballot. So my question with that one, and then I'll get to the future one, is that if it would have been on the ballot and that judge didn't address any other legal issues in it and it would have passed, what would the city have to challenge that in court, because of it would be forcing the city to do something illegal? And then this next question is, have you had a chance to review the new referendum language that's out there, and if there is stuff deemed illegal by the city on there, would the same process happen
as we did last time? Because again, it's not that I don't have it, but I got it. Anybody who knows me can tell you I got plenty of room. But I also understand that the arena I'm in, and so we consult other folks to make sure that it's just not Cliff Shepard that coming here telling me what you ought to do. So we have gone back to some of the same experts we consulted last time. They provided me a copy of what we have and said, without any input from me, what do you think of this referendum? And I don't have an opinion yet, because we just got it to try to get an answer to whether they think there are problems. But one of the things I took away from the judge's order in the first one is that she felt like that we did not work with the BLSC, or they didn't work with us. Basically, she pointed fingers in both ways and said, y'all need to work together. But there is a basic problem with at least that referendum in working together, because it put at risk the opportunity to ever use that building. And that's ultimately, ironically, what she ruled on and said, yeah, this is misleading because it makes it look like this will happen, when there's actually no guarantee that it will happen, for the simple reason that a government charter can't command what a private organization will or will not do. So until I see what may be part two of a coming referendum, I'll, that's the one that concerns me most. The other part about how we work together depends on some of the language and how vague it is, and you know, there are some issues, but I would need to listen to what other folks say who are not as close to it as me. You know, the first question we get from everybody we've spoken to is, wait a minute, they're fighting to be volunteers. Because it doesn't register. And I say, yeah, they are. And that they have a long history, this is what they want to do. And so just tell me what you think of the referendum. We'll have that information. I don't have it right here.
And when you were in front of the judge, was the judge aware of the negotiation and the original settlement agreement that was offered? So she was unaware of any discussions we've had.
That's correct. And it was for the purpose of the referendum, it's irrelevant.
Right. But so, I'm just saying her comment about not working together, she was unaware of any working together that had been done.
And there really was no appropriate place to inject that into the conversation. This really was about, what did the thing say? Was it misleading? She said, yeah, it's misleading.
Thank you.
First off, I just want to say that I agree with Mayor and Dan Johnson with going to the SHAVE meeting to work this out. Second, I just have concerns that the last thing we as the city want is to be back in the scope of the Department of Labor. And I really wish this wasn't as red line as it is, because some of it will put us back in hot waters, correct?
That's the concern. And again, my purpose in bringing this to your attention is because for as long as I've been in this case, there's been this misdialogue. It's just not right. The narrative is not right. Most of what they said they wanted was offered to them, and they rejected it out of hand. And I get, if it's not exactly what you want, why there would be a reflex of action to say no, but you have to have a recognition that one or more of you said, we're not 100 years ago. We're not 30 years ago. We're 2022 right now, and we have to live with today's reality. We didn't make the law. We're just trying to follow it.
One last thing. I know, well, actually, we need to follow the law. We want to follow the Department of Labor laws. And like the mayor have said in the past, we're not 100 years ago. And like you just said, we're in 2022. And I think for most of us, I think every human being on this planet hate, dislike change. And they think it's for the worse, but sometimes it's for the greater good, or for the betterment of the city. So I know things have to change. I don't like change, but if things change, they have to change. So that's where I stand. Thank you.
Councilor Stokes?
Yeah, Cliff, you mentioned that you had spoken to the new attorney for VLSC.
Yes.
And it seemed pretty confident that if a settlement agreement were to be reached, that they would drop their lawsuit.
I don't know. Let me just say, I've had good and pleasant conversations with Mr. Roberts. He's amiable. He's easy to deal with on the phone. There's not any, you know, bickering back and forth. We bicker in court. That's where we're supposed to bicker. And I explained to him that this was going to be something we would be requesting, and that if it worked out, that I would be expecting to come back to him with some sort of proposal. And I previewed to him the flyer, the 14A flyer, and why that causes concern for us that he wasn't aware of. But he, like me, he said the same thing. I'm not a labor lawyer either, right? So neither of us are labor lawyers. We're litigants. We fight in court over things. A lot of times we're learning about as we go. But we consult other experts. And I can tell you with Holland and Knight, they've got labor lawyers in that firm. So we've got labor lawyers too. And that's what we're trying to do, is we're trying to let the people who actually are in this arena direct how we resolve the case and how we advise our clients. Because if my labor lawyer folks tell me, oh no, you can do that, it's not personal to me. I don't care. If they can do it without putting you all at risk, my job is to try to keep you from being in the risk game. That's it.
And do you think, and this may be a shade question, so feel free not to answer, but what do you think, that if we can get some sort of settlement, that we can get everybody in a room and actually hash out? Because you've got one agreement here, a red line agreement here, we've got more and more here. I think we've got to get heads in a room and not just back and forth shooting emails back and forth.
Yes, but it could be none of y'all, or yeah, maybe just one of y'all. It would more likely be me, Sandy, Mike, maybe one or more of our labor people, and some representative or representative, because they can have as many as they want. We can't, because of sunshine. And then with their lawyers, or it could be as down, I mean, assuming that if the lawyers can get on the same page, usually, not always, the clients will follow. Sometimes they don't. I've definitely had that experience where, you know, you get paid a lot of money for advice that's not being listened to, but that happens. I don't take it personally. But yes, to your point, if it's needed, yeah, you can even do it in the form of mediation. But VLSC, to their credit, asked early on about a mediation. The problem was, at that time, we didn't even have the parameter of what a mediation might look like, and that we told them. And so we're further down the road. We know a little bit more than we did. Certain things have happened. The initial referendum was tossed. We got a new lawsuit in front of us. We got new lawyers in front of us. And so some of the ill-chosen language that went on between lawyers is now a thing of the past, at least for the moment. And we are back on a good footing, I think, with the current law firm. I hope that will continue. So, yeah, that would be the goal. And sometimes, if clients will listen on both sides, the lawyers can get together because they know what the language is. And as long as both lawyers are comfortable that they're protecting their client's interest, Mr. Roberts protecting the LLC, me trying to protect the city with Sandy's help, then we should be able to get it done. And if we need to get in to do it, we'll do it.
Well, I'm supportive of us getting to a shade meeting to get this move forward. I'd like to get all. I don't like being in lawsuits. It's not a lot of fun. So I'd like for us to get out of them where we can. So hopefully, if we can make some progress, both sides can make some progress. And going through with the charter stuff coming up. I mean, we all spend a lot of time. Our charter has got a lot of stuff that it doesn't need in it, and I'd like to have this resolved outside of a charter issue. And I think I'm really hopeful that we can get that done.
Again, we have the time, because they may get the signatures a lot sooner, and that's okay, but the ballot is not till March, and there's certainly an ability to resolve things if both parties are wanting the same thing. They want to be on the beach. We get that. We don't have a problem with being on the beach as long as we're not going to have to keep writing checks to the Department of Labor. There should be a way to figure that out. That's what we've got to work on.
Councilor Golding.
Thank you. Thank you, Sandy and Cliff, for providing this information and answering questions. I have to agree with my colleague, Mr. Jansen. The hazing situation is very concerning for me because I think that puts us in a situation that if we do move forward with the VLSC and we have hazing issues happen, then we're not protecting the purse of the city of Jack's Beach, and we've not done our job. So that's something that has really got to be resolved. I saw the same article that he referenced, and so it's very concerning.
And it's not the only one, it's just one. But there have been detailed articles written by former members about hazing. So we know it's a thing. We don't know what they're going to hit for.
But with that aside, you know, as all of us have said all along, you know, I totally appreciate the history and the service that's been provided by the VLSC all these years. It's a very important part of our community, and if there's any way that we can find a legal path forward, I definitely want to support it, and so I support us doing a shade meeting to discuss that further.
I'm fine with a shade meeting as well.
Mine's not a question, just a comment, especially seeing some of the things that were struck through and changed on the original draft just shows a kind of balance of power issue, a balance of ownership issue. You know, whereas the city has the express and authority to provide ocean rescue services is struck out. And the definition of kind of the VLSC and the VLSC's role is struck out. I think that there's... this is the first time, I mean, and we've been going through this for months and you've been part of it. This is the first time kind of just in the general environment that I felt a willingness for a compromise from the VLSC. I don't know if it's as strong of a willingness as I'd like it to be, but maybe we'll get there. But even in the approach of doing the charter amendments, all the charter, and you just said it, all that can do is tell us what to do. That doesn't tell the VLSC what to do. It doesn't obligate the VLSC or the Red Cross in the case of the other amendment. It doesn't obligate them to anything. It can only obligate us. So that makes it very one-sided. It forces the city to do A, B, and C, and it does not require the VLSC to do anything. And it can't. So I'm just, you know, again, I'm still dismayed that that things went down the way they did in March and April. But I do, you know, if we can, at this point, if we do nothing, we're not getting back on the beach next summer. I mean, there's just, you know, the earliest anything would be resolved is, you know, April, May, maybe. So I think that if there is really a desire to resolve this, you know, with expediently, is that a word? And mutually, rather than just telling us what to do, let's work together and what are we both going to do, and recognize that a partnership isn't this. Hopefully both parties see that, is all I'm saying.
I will say that one of the questions that, like conversations that I had with Mr. Roberts, was I think you guys know, they filed a motion for temporary injunction. I suspect if there's going to be a hearing, based on what the court told us, that would be on or before December 9th. But whether there's a hearing may depend on the outcome of the motion to dismiss. We'll see. But I kind of expect that sometime between now and December 9th, I'll be at a hearing on the motion for temporary injunction. Why that's important to you, though, is I asked Mr. Roberts, what was the reason for the urgency? We're not in the season right now. This is not a time where people are routinely running into the ocean in colder weather and so forth. And he said that they still need to be training to be ready for, I guess, whenever the season starts. I don't know whether that's April, May, whenever it starts. And I understand that concern. The other thing that was mentioned was the effect on their recruiting of people, which I don't really understand how it works, but I accept them at face value. But if I understand the training regimen, other than having equipment, which I guess are the floaties or whatever you have, you know, the stuff you have to do, there's a whole beach out there for training. Just run up and down it, go in, swim, you know, do whatever you got to do. So I still don't get the urgency, but one way or the other, we're going to figure that out probably between now and sometime.
Counselor Jansen.
Mr. Shepherd, are you aware of Mr. Roberts or any of his colleagues being in attendance tonight?
I know Mr. Roberts only because I saw his face on the screen, and I don't think he's here. I don't know if anybody else here is with this room, but they could be.
Thank you.
Ms. Golding.
Thank you. So one of the things that, the thing that initiated the lawsuit to begin with was the changing the locks on the station. So can we have some explanation about that situation from the city side of things? Because I know there have been a lot, there's been opportunities for it to be discussed on the VLSC side, but I think it's important to hear.
The person who would know is Mr. Stathopoulos, but if he doesn't mind, I want to take this one just because I want to keep us out of trouble, because it is one of the disputed issues in the lawsuit. But in short sum, after having provided the notice that was required, we believe appropriate notice, that was 9 or 10 months notice, to terminate the then agreement with VLSC, our agreement with VLSC, we were asked by members of VLSC about holding the graduation ceremony in the facilities when we were there providing the services 7 days a week. And we provided the answer that, like the training, you got the whole beach, do whatever you need to, but no, we're using the station that we're doing life saving. That's what we do on Sundays and weekends and so forth because of the situation right now with the Department of Labor. And it is told to me, and I have been invited names of employees who verify it, that on that day, instead of taking the wise counsel of Mr. Stathopoulos and or the head of the Jacks Beach Ocean Rescue, no, you cannot use the station today, that instead certain members, I don't want to name them by name, you do know who they were, came out and harassed our employees in a really unfortunate way, because again, if you assume both organizations, ours and theirs, have the same goal, which is to make sure people are safe, there's a lot of things that you could do, but one of the things that should be like the line you don't cross is interfere with people who are trying to do the flag saving work, whether it's us interfering with them or them interfering with us. But that's what they did. That is why Mr. Stathopoulos took the action that he took.
Okay, thank you.
Just to be clear, that's what they were alleged to have done, not what they have actually actually did. And I think there's, what I hear is that there's a disagreement on both sides about that.
Yeah,
but I don't want to sit there and say that this absolutely was done, because it was, it's based off of what people reported.
Yes, that's correct.
Thank you.
That's correct.
Well, and just for clarification too, was there a letter? There was a letter, right, that was sent to the VLSC outlining the rules, so to speak, for the sharing of the station when we had to change the way things were being done?
Yes, that's correct. To go back to what Mr. Shepherd was saying at the beginning of the conversation, we know more now than we knew then. We're talking about a point in time where we had not yet received our official report from the Department of Labor. We did not have that final finding, so to speak. But we do know that there were two issues that were at play. One of the issues was the issue of back wages that needed to be paid, and the fact that the Department of Labor had found us to be joint employers with the conditions that Mr. Shepherd showed you in the PowerPoint. And it was for those reasons that we wanted to make sure the two organizations, until we had a workable solution, were kept separate. And that means only one would be in the station at a given point in time, only one would be using equipment at a given point in time. And that was a letter that was sent to the VLSC that said, until we have an agreement as to how we work going forward, we do not want you in the station while we're in there conducting our business. And as of right now, you don't have a need to be using the equipment because we're the only ones providing the service 7 days a week. So that was sent in a letter to the VLSC to make sure that we were clear as to how we were moving forward until we had a more permanent solution.
And can you or Cliff explain the joint employer situation?
As best I can. Let me pick up on something that Mike said, because it spurred an answer to a question that Ms. DeMont asked that I realize now that things need to be married together. The question was, how can we get an opinion now if the Thompson case is still pending? Well, one of the things we also couldn't get, because the Thompson case was still pending at that time, was the full investigative report. We had asked for it under a FOIA, which is the federal equivalent of Sunshine Law, Public Records Act, Freedom of Information Act, and they said, you do not get that until this investigation is concluded and considered closed. And so so we didn't have it. And actually, if I'm not mistaken, I think it may have been the VLSC lawyers that got it before we did, when it was considered closed, and I think I got my copy from them. But in that report, to your question, they outline a number of things that went into the milieu of determining that we were co-employers with the VLSC. One was that we did the exact same training, or we received the same training. We used the same facilities, we used the same equipment, we used the same vehicles, we occupy the same station, we provide the same services, et cetera, et cetera. And so for all of those reasons, they said, they used co-employer. And one of the discussions I had with the prior law firm, and was told by the prior law firm, the prior law firm that represented VLSC, was, oh, well, that's, you know, they say that stuff all the time, but any competent labor lawyer could fight that and win, which is why I raised the issue. We're not in the business of fighting other government agencies. We're in the business of trying to comply with the law as we understand it. But to your point, that is why they found that we were co-employers. When the city council at that time, an insurance defense lawyer named Cindy Townsend advised the city, I wasn't a part of those things, but as a result, whatever that advice was, the determination was made, okay, we need to resolve it, and that's what was done.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions from council? If not, I think what I heard is a consensus to have a shade meeting.
I'll let you take that.
We'll turn it over to Sandy.
Just for the record, it's to join the shade pursuant to section 286.011, so paragraph 8 of the Florida statutes, to discuss settling VLSC versus the city, case number 16-2022-CA-002089, and the city of Jacks Beach versus the American Red Cross, case number 16-2022-CA-006314. As part of our request, we'd like to have the presence of the city manager, outside counsel, Chris Shepherd, to be present to aid in the discussion and advice regarding the offer of settlement. As far as timing, we would prefer that meeting to be next Monday, November 7, 2022, and the anticipated time frame for the duration is 1 hour. It could be a little bit. We have the consensus on a shade meeting. We will go about scheduling the court reporter, and we will take it up with a more specific time by notice. So our regular meeting is at 6 o'clock. What I was hoping to do, if you didn't have your schedules available right now, is to send out inquiries as to what hour block of hours you have available before 6 o'clock, and then whatever works for the consensus or the majority of you, we will schedule the meeting for that time. But again, we think that we will need at least 1 hour. It may go a little bit longer. Okay. Thank you.
That was the only item on our briefing for tonight, so thank you all, council, for attending.